been known to disagree with the council before. Yours could become an important voice in the new order, second only to my own. I offer you a chance for greatness, Jor-El. Take it. Join us. You will bow down before me, Jor-El. I swear it. No matter that it takes an eternity, you will bow.
When you were small, I died while giving you a chance for life. And now, even though it will exhaust the final energy left within me,
Father, no.
Look at me, Kal-El. The Kryptonian prophecy will be at last fulfilled. The Son becomes the Father.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio right here at FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station in the world. And now it is time for the man of steel himself, Mr. Mike Harris, with the short end of the stick. So are you ready, Mike? Because here it comes. It's all yours. Take it away.
Good morning and welcome. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on Veterans Radio Network. Actually, this is Veterans Today Radio Network. And also on Revolution Radio, which is www.freedomslips.com, Studio B. And today is Tuesday, May 26, 2015. And I'm very pleased to have as my guest a gentleman who I met for the first time in Italy at Mr. Kesh's house. Electrical engineer and very, very smart guy, Dan Winter. Dan, welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Great to be with you again, Mike.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I you know, the thing I like about having you on the radio is that the time goes so quick because your subject matter is always so interesting. I mean, there's no denying it. The stuff that you work on, your knowledge base, everything that you address is just, for me anyway, and I hope for the listeners out there, I find it just so fascinating.
Thank you.
Well, fun. Like I said, as the Mexicans say, el gusto es mío, the pleasure is mine. So anyway, I understand you were just on a conference call and you're able to demonstrate your Priori device. Why don't you, let's start out talking just a little bit about that, if you're willing to. I know this is kind of a secret classified project, if you will, just, you know, for all the commercial reasons and stuff. But if you could just tell the people a little bit, it'd be great.
Sure. And what's fun is it's actually instructive to wonderful healing and spiritual principles as well, ultimately. So Antoine Priori is very famous in France. The French government sponsored him and he healed, and I do say healed, thousands of cases, medical cases, hundreds of cases of cancer, etc. And they had a very large, expensive device. It's a cold plasma field. You have these, you know, special glass tubes that have noble gases. And by high frequency triggering them, the gases fire up and glow. And then there's a low frequency modulation, which we now call conjugate. And between the two cold plasma fields, you have this little like a cold fire between the two lit up tubes, sort of like the hemispheres of your brain, and all kinds of amazing healing. We've had success with swelling and even with the melanoma and with parasites, infections, and we're just launching major clinical trials in three countries. But what's fun is that, and this is what I was meditating on for tonight's conversation, is we had a professor, Stavros, from Athens just here, and he's a professor of geophysics. And his specialty is documenting the geophysics of ancient sacred sites. And there are certain sacred sites where a certain time of year, a ball of fire, I mean, almost like ball lightning, would show up famously, be very healing, profound, spiritual. And under certain spiritual conditions, this cold plasma fire would heal everyone around. And we now know the physics. It's based on what Priori was doing.
Well, let's talk for a minute, because something that's happened in our modern society is that we have decoupled spirituality from our scientific method.
Yeah, that's a problem.
And it is. And so, you know, what I hear you doing and what I infer is that you're looking for methodologies that will reunite this in a more holistic fashion so that your spiritual health, your physical health become integrated and dependent upon each other. You know, one helps the other. It's like when I go to the gym. If I go to the gym and if I just lift weights, yeah, I get stronger. If I go to the gym and if I just do cardio, yeah, my wind gets better. But if I go to the gym and lift weights and do cardio, everything gets better. And I kind of see this really as an integrated approach to, you know, your spiritual health, your mental health, your physical health, all the aspects that make us human beings in this realm of existence.
Yeah, I think that in terms of science, where that metaphor goes in terms of integrating multiple facets into oneness is that the principle in medical science is called heart rate variability, that the more harmonics in your heart, the healthier, the more immune system you have. It's called harmonic inclusiveness and heart rate variability. Well, it turns out in science that this thing called phase conjugation, which is actually just a wave the shape of a caduceus that includes short waves and long waves all in one contiguous nest. And the concept is that the more broad spectral it is, the more healing it is. So it's similar in your DNA when you have bliss experience, and this is good physics, that the short wave of your DNA is the braid within a braid within a braid within a braid, perfectly embedded, nested, imploded with the longer wave. And so that connection from the long wave to the short wave, which the wave mechanics is optimized by golden ratio phase conjugation, that's what creates the implosion, the more broad spectral it is. So in the prairie, for example, we have high kilohertz driving a plasma fire. It's a beautiful flame in a tube. And yet it's modulated in very low frequencies, very similar to the Schumann resonance harmonics. And because they're all coupled perfectly, they implode. They get negentropic. They get centripetal, which is exactly how brain waves do it.
Well, you know, I know what the term negentropic means. Why don't you define that for the listeners so they also don't have to guess?
Well, in physics, the example well documented is that when you get lasers meeting from exact opposite direction, they do what's called phase conjugate, and they do. It's proven it creates self organization. The opposite of entropy, which is to say disorder, meaning a tendency toward self ordering. So negentropy means the emerging from chaos, quite literally. So it's similar to saying what makes Gaia, living planet, self-organized. Because, you know, Lovelock proved, well, the planet Earth appears to have almost quasi-intentionally, over a couple of billion years, regulated temperature and pressure, everything necessary to make biology possible. And so Gaia is demonstrably self-organizing, negentropic. And so some people say it's gravity. Well, it turns out that the frequency signature of Earth's Gaia's Schumann harmonics, it's perfectly the precise equation for what is a phase conjugate pump wave. It's on the cover of my book at fractalfield.com that the Schumann harmonics are actually a perfect golden ratio cascade right from Planck length and time. Hence, negentropy, self-organization.
Well, in negentropy, now, one of the things you and I discussed on previous calls is that you can take a rusted nail and restore it to an unrusted part, but you can't make an unrusted nail rusty. You know, how does that work?
It's very good to think about this, because what it means is in the well-documented physics of time reversal from phase conjugate optics, it's clear you can only return to a state of greater order. So there's something, when anybody talks to you about time reversal, which is there's some real examples in phase conjugate optics physics, they can never talk about going back to disorder. Nope, only go back to order. And that has profound implications for, you know, what the priori is and what, you know, time reversal is for biology. And I think to help people think about that, I recommend they consider the ancient literature. You know, they in the Bible, we talked about this before, they said, "I will raise a Shem unto the Lord." And, you know, Zechariah Sitchin took 10 years and finally decided the word a Shem stone was, he called it a highward fire stone, which we now know meant implosive capacitor, which makes a bioactive field. And that's what the word, where the word altar in the church came from. An altar in the church is called a Shem stone. And that's where we get our word schematic, Shem, and also our word chemistry and alchemy, which means something that makes what's called access to a black hole in an electric field, which is therefore a bioactive field. And the Hermetic science was the ability to make your pyramids and dolmen make this kind of electric field, because you save your civilization, because you can charge your seeds and your shaman and save your death and birth experiences if you can make a bioactive electric field, your Shem stone. And that's why the people who wrote the book Seeds of Knowledge have dramatic demonstrations. They can save agriculture by charging seeds properly in that bioactive field. Example, purify.com, my technology.
So how does this intersect with the Priori device and the experimental research that you're doing?
That's exactly the right question. I mean, we firmly believe that we have the ultimate device to switch on and off stem cell growth, for example, and that we're testing right now. In fact, as we speak, this moment, we're doing the tests on the seed germination, seed growth effect. You know, the people who, famous people, Burke, who wrote the book Seeds of Knowledge, supported by Nancy Talbot, great friend, and she's shared with us the pictures. They developed a pulse field, and they've got dozens of photographs of dramatic agricultural benefits. Only a few minutes of this pulse, and the seed just growth effects are, you know, 30, 50%, amazing growth effects. Clearly, you know, all the people who studied the ancient dolmen proved they were not there to live in. No, they were there to charge your seeds and your people. And then what the Seeds of Knowledge, Burke, they found is this pulse field needs to be applied to the seed only for minutes, not hours. In fact, if you apply it too long, it ain't good. And the same thing's true of the Priori. And so, and this is why the Aboriginals always said, you know, your sacred space is for short exposure. You don't want to live there. Because, you know, when you wear the metabolic accelerator, why, you're inhabiting a lightning bolt. Okay, so this was a life-saving science, the Hermetic science, truly. Caduceus is called phase conjugation in physics. And the Hermetic science was to build a bioactive field. And that's how you save your civilization.
Well, okay, so we apply this bioactive field to seeds. The seeds perform much better than untreated seeds or treated seeds. How does this work on current living organisms? You know, whether it's planaria, Drosophila, human beings, dogs, cats, whatever. All right, let me phrase the question correctly. If you were going to anticipate effects, and we haven't done this yet, what effects would you anticipate?
Well, if I may toot our horn here for a moment, our successful agriculture technology, theimploder.com, is an example. We have a device that adds a centripetal capacitive vortex, I call it Schauberger's dream, to water, and then it's fed into centripetal, profoundly powerful centripetal magnetics.
Hello, Dan?
Yes. Are we losing you?
Yeah. No. It just went quiet. I heard a background noise or something, and then I didn't hear anything from you. But yes, you're here. All is good.
Oh, okay. Well, so anyway, theimploder.com, we use this centripetal force to water both vortex affected and magnetic. And then we achieve a dramatic growth effect. And
Are we getting a feedback loop or something on here?
I have I'm using my headphones, so I think
I am too. I shouldn't be, but we are simulcasting on two networks. And I just wondering if there's some conflict between the two of them. That's all. So let me make some adjustments on my end and see what I can come up with here. So let's try. Let me go ahead. Keep talking. Let me see what I can do.
So we just that the principle of what enables growth, the difference between a dead seed and a live seed is simple. That the live seed has the ability to become electrically centripetal and thus suck in the first molecule of nutrient. So that first ability to become centripetal, to suck in that charge, to attract the first nutrient, as it were, is the essence of life versus death. And that is an electrical phenomenon called centripetal or conjugate force. And that's the difference between life and death. So to be alive is basically to be able to implode electrically at the center. That's the essence of life. So anything that applies a centripetal field, it adds to life. That's the Schauberger implosion principle. And we can do that electrically, magnetically, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the core principle here. And that's how you can energize many things once you understand what a bioactive field is. And conventional physics, unfortunately, doesn't really know what makes any field affect centripetal. And that's the Schauburger principle we've evolved, implosion.
Well, that's the thing. Let's give out your website for this imploder again, because I think this is a critical piece. And like I called you, what, a week or so ago, and I said, you know, Dan, I had a dream about your device, and that you were now making the device for shower heads as well as for sink faucets and things like that. I just thought it was a fascinating dream, because I know your imploder currently is not an inexpensive device, but it does such wondrous work for agricultural applications. And I thought, wow, everyone should have one of these in their home.
Well, it's the imploder, T-H-E, theimploder.com. And basically, it's simply a perfect vortex, which, if the water is conductive, becomes like capacitive implosive. So the seeds near the vortex actually grow better. And then that feeds into the world's strongest magnetic water treatment for agriculture, which is well proven in many countries, with the results we're the most powerful and the most proven agricultural water treatment on the planet, not to mention the hydration solubility benefits for humans, not to mention the fact that it's better than a water softener in most cases, and not to mention that the hydration effect is the essence of many disease issues. And speaking of that, now they found that by recirculating the water through the imploder, they have the most amazing results in the healing spa environment, so much so there's a whole new business just launched, imploderspa.com. And there you will see that by recirculating through the imploder, the water actually gets foamy, and in the spa environment, they're having dramatic success with diseases. And this whole new business of the spa approach, use of the imploder, is launching out of Belgium. So things are good.
Well, that is good, and these are technologies that I think need to be taken out of the laboratory into the mainstream as quickly as possible, because the upside potential for this, as far as disease, cancer, like you said, parasite infections, a number of things, to get these in the hands of the people who are suffering, I think is just really, really imperative.
Yes, and it's so self-empowering ultimately, because energy medicine leads closer to the relationship with your own emotions. That, you know, when the king wears a crown and his thoughts speed up, suddenly he realizes he needs to pay attention to his intentions, to his emotions, to his thoughts. And there's all kinds of implications to restored centripetal forces, which link, instead of a passive, you know, chemical-based medicine, into an energy-based medicine, which is closer to human empowerment.
Well, particularly as we touched on earlier, discussing the linkage between the spiritual, the mental, and the physical, and how do we get all of these, you know, what we look at according to the modern scientific method as independent of each other, when really they're very dependent on each other. And, you know, one feeds the other, feeds the other, feeds the other, and it's a circle. And once you've got one of them working better, it'll help the other two work better. And so it's a net positive effect. You know, how do we get everyone there to where we, you know, we can address many of the pathologies that affect mankind currently?
I mean, I think the core issue is what it is that enables your mind to steer a wave. You know, obviously, tornadoes only follow the center of lowest pressure. Obviously, everything in physics is made of tornadoes. It's called vortex string theory wormholes. So who's steering the tornado? Well, if you look at brainwave physics, we see that this alpha-beta golden ratio phase conjugate brain waves, which are the same harmonic cascade as the Schumann of the Earth, that your brain waves create like two pine cones kissing noses, and they create a low pressure point in the center between the hemispheres, which is the physics of how you measure bliss in brain waves, which is we have an invention for that. And then the right and left hemisphere need to be 180 degrees out of phase, which is the physics of called flame in the mind. And suddenly your brain is making what's called a longitudinal wave or compressional wave. And we have the example, and this is the introduction to the physics of the only way to be initiated in the Bonpo Tibetan or as a Cherokee. If you can't make a flame with your mind, you ain't in. You're not the shaman. And so the flame in the mind, the physics was demonstrated by Ingo Swann he heated a thermistor at a distance with his mind, and he did it through a Faraday cage, so it was obviously not any standard transverse electromagnetic. No, it was a longitudinal wave, and that is, it's called longitudinal wave interferometry. It's how you control fire at a distance, not just with your mind. It is the absolute holy grail of plasma fusion physics as well. And so once we understand how you're creating this focus, now this all sounds very theoretical, but let's take a very practical example. When our friend, the geophysicist, Dr. Stavros from Athens, documented that at a certain time of year, in this certain sacred stone temple, always this cold flame plasma would literally light the fire of everyone's candle in the church instantly. It's documented historically. He says, interesting, he says, but only if the priest was using the Greek alphabet to bless the flame. Well, it turns out we know the physics that he was holding in his mind an angle of a torus, a spiral on a torus, which is the flame letter origin of sacred alphabets. And thus he could focus his mind using the template of ancient sacred alphabets, which is the origin of propulsion. I mean, this goes on and on. It's powerful physics.
Well, try to define for me when you say fire in the mind.
Yes.
Because, different people are going to have different perceptions of what that means according to what their filter of experience. Can you try to break this down to a more universal, understandable way? Is there any method to do that?
Yeah. Well, there's a famous story of near-death experience where he was hit by lightning and then he... had a death experience, hit by lightning, flame in the mind. And then after he woke up from the near-death experience, everyone he would touch, his DNA was literally superconductive, and he'd have a flash of memory of all the emotions of anyone whom he would touch, so much so that he was afraid to touch anyone. And so as a result, we now know the physics that when you pass high amperage down DNA helix, at the moment of crystallization, it becomes measurably an electrical superconductor, which is how you become when you have intense bliss experience. You have this flame in the mind experience. And this is an introduction to the biomechanics of Kundalini, which we've been teaching for 20 years, goldenmean.info/Kundalini. So essentially what it means is that if you're able to support increased metabolic rate, the flame in the mind, the plasma density, that fire, is literally how shareable is the wave. So now let's give a practical spiritual example. When you conceive of an idea, which is called Eureka experience, and your hair stands up, most everyone's had that experience. What made your hair stand up? Well, we know it made your electrically. You became implosive as a capacitor. You attracted a lot of charge. But why do you attract a lot of capacitive charge, which Christians call grace and Sufis call chi? Just at the moment when you had this great idea. The reason is because there's an electrical relationship between attracting living plasma, the flame in the mind, literally, and pure intention.
Okay.
The way pure intention is measured, we have a history of that. I invented the term heart coherence because I invented the mathematics of how to measure it. And basically your EKG coherence goes way up when you think a shareable thought. And we've told the story before that if you continuously think only shareable thoughts, which is to say, meditate on pure principle, which is to say, distill the essence out of every experience, then you attract so much charge that you don't need to die. In fact, death was only invented by biology to teach us to stop trying to store unshareable thoughts.
Well, I have two issues I want to address here immediately. One of them is I want to go back to the priori device. And I want to ask you directly, we talk time reversal on a biological entity. Do you foresee, I know you've not done this yet, but do you anticipate a result to where someone could literally roll back the odometer? You know, in my case, I'm 60. Can I roll this thing back to, I'm 25, 30 years old? It's just a question I'm asking.
Well, historically, for those who have studied the Sumerian and how they described the necessity for raising Hashem unto the Lord, the question would be an unqualified yes. In history, they had to build the Shem stone because in Sumerian, they were aging catastrophically, and this was the only way to fix it. So there's some indication there. But now, in modern times, we know that time reversal is almost universally equated with negentropy, self-organization, which means returning to order, so that returning a body to order has certain limitations, which means that, for example, if you're too young or the decay has gone too far, if you cannot withstand the charge density of accelerated metabolism, then you can't restore that centripetal condition. What I could say is, it's similar to saying to a person, you know, you walked into this room and everyone there was having a bliss experience and you weren't ready. What happens to you? Because we know electrically bliss experience is contagious, just like we know it's proven, Ray Moody, that the vision of the wormhole of death experience is electrically contagious. It's been proven by surgeons, and we know why. It's because the DNA has to fabricate a negentropic centripetal black hole for your plasma to implode inside of. Otherwise, you don't become sustainable. So bliss and death have a lot in common, and that is the core electrical engineering of time reversal. So it's a very rich question.
Well, it is, and you know, the deeper we dig, the more digging we have to do. This is just such a fascinating topic. But the other thing I want to ask you about, because you just touched on it, and you developed an application for iPhones that measures heart coherence and can allow people to match their heart coherence. Why don't you talk a little bit about that, how you developed it, why you developed it, and how people can access this if they wanted to get a copy of the app and try it out?
Yes, right now it's heartsring.com, and it's currently just for iPhone. We're developing for iPad, and it measures the pulse by using the iPhone camera light as a finger plethysmogram. Light penetration measures pulse. It's called vasodilation, vasoconstriction. And so you get the timing of the pulse. It's very common. The new iWatch will support. And so you can then do the spectrum analysis of your EKG pulse. Low frequency is called HRV, heart rate variability. And by displaying the time history waterfall plot of the HRV power spectra, you get the frequency signature, the musical key signature of your heart over time. And the application allows you to learn with a visual breathing cue to change your heart rate musical fundamental and thus join your lover, your guru, or your rock star, or your DJ, and do it in groups, which is called empathy training, which is commercial value as well, and conflict resolution, etc. And so that's all in the heartsring.com now, but there's a major upgrade underway to that product with the same group as actually developing the Prairie, and we're going to have hospital grade now, which is, you know, now you pay thousands of dollars, you go to the hospital, you get a device, and you wear it for a day or a week, and you go back and your doctor analyzes your HRV, your heart rate variability over that period, and any major period over the last day or week when your heart rate did not vary, when it was stuck, is a great indicator of all kinds of health problems. And so there's an hour-long BBC special recently about using hospitals to learn heart rate variability. Well, we're going to do that in a $19 app, actually, where you get this graphic report of your heart rate over the week. For example, if you're a couch potato or you're sitting at a desk for 8 hours a day and your heart rate doesn't change for 4 to 8 hours at a time, it's extremely bad for your health, actually. Similar, when the person who invented this, his name is Dr. Irving Dardik, the book is called Making Waves, and he was the chairman of the Olympic Medical Committee, and he had all of these athletes who were dying like flies from heart attacks, and he figured out why. You make a graph of their heart rate change over their exercise scheme, and that heart rate change looks like a square wave. Heart rate way high, and then very high, and then down, stop. And when your heart rate change looks like a square wave, that's a recipe for heart attack. And he figured out how they produce Olympic athletes, which was a training, which uses this analysis of heart rate change over time. And it turns out that the ideal heart rate change for the perfect exercise for Olympic athlete quality actually looks like a caduceus. It's called phase conjugation. So your first year exercise, you know, is your heart rate very high. Then you relax. And then your next few minutes of exercise, your heart rate needs to go 0.618 as high, and et cetera, et cetera.
So really what you want to see is more of a sine wave than a square wave.
You want to see a curve that approximates a caduceus ideally, which produces what's called harmonic inclusiveness in heart rate variability. The profound implication here is that, as is now proven, this is a fundamental tenet that needs to be taught in every biology class, is that harmonic inclusiveness predicts the vitality of every living thing, atoms, babies, planets, and galaxies. So you, for example, you take a forest, you spectrum and analyze the sounds. If you got harmonic inclusiveness, then that forest has an immune system. This is called bioacoustic habitat theory. Whereas if you take a spectrum analysis of the forest and there's a big piece of the audio harmonics that are missing, like, you know, one species of cicada, birds just died, then that forest has a hole in its immune system. So the forest actually works to find a species to make sounds in that sonic spectral niche until harmonic inclusiveness is restored, and that forest will then again have an immune system. And you can do that for your heart and your planet and your galaxy. And harmonic inclusiveness perfected is called phase conjugate, and that implosion is what's the cover on the cover of my book, That Equation.
Well, one of the things I wanted to point out, you and I discussed this when we met in Italy about your heart rings application, and that is that this is something that, like you alluded to, couples can use to achieve that coherence between each other. People who are in conflict, you know, work group, work teams, can use this to you get everyone on the same page, get everyone functioning at the same level there. And I just think it's just a fascinating application. But I don't have an iPhone. I've got an Android-based system. So
we're upgrading. But the thing that's cool about this is that it's actually empathy training 101. Originally, when we found this, my system was purchased by ANZ Bank in Melbourne, Australia, to teach bank managers to get on the same wavelength as their interracial clients, their Black Aboriginal clients. And you see how it works is that from neuro-linguistic programming, we learn that micromotion entrainment is the opposite of conflict. So the literature suggests that if you're breathing in your micromotion and you're it's entrained on the low frequencies with the person whose emotions you're trying to feel, then suddenly there's charge transfer between bodies to such an extent that conflict is eliminated. So it's actually corporate consensus process. It's teaching military generals not to shoot each other, and it's Tantra training 101. In fact, my system was used by the Tantra Training Institute of Los Angeles, William Golden. The point being that this originally was an expensive system, was my heart tuner system, and now we're evolving that whole system, very inexpensive, $19 iPhone application. And right now you can have up to four people learn empathy by this breathing cue where you entrain hearts and breath. But ultimately, it was called the harmonic module. We know that 11 different times when a million children sang the same song, the solar flares were dramatically affected. It has been measured.
So what was the effect on the solar flares?
It's a graph. We have it on the website. It's a dramatic reduction in the number of solar flares. So literally when a million children are singing the same song, the sun goes, gets peaceful. And this became, you know, restored centripetal forces equals the physics of teaching peacemaking as science, which is to say the ultimate definition of peace in physics is centripetal negentropy, because obviously peacefulness is defined in physics as the ability of waves to become stable. And the stability defined here is implosion. So you define peacemaking in the frequencies on the magnetics of the land, you find peacemaking in the frequencies of your breath, you can define peacemaking in the frequency of your brainwaves and your heart. This was discovered by my teacher, Phil Callahan, who he had discovered that he needed to know whether the next tribe on the Amazon River was going to be headhunters or friendly. And he measured magnetic lines, and he showed that if the magnetic lines are making peace, which is to say are conductive, soil magnetic permissivity, then in fact he could make peace by restoring magnetic connection on the land. And he showed this in Ireland, the Yugoslavia, So this became a Peace University curriculum for teaching peacemaking as science, that Village A and Village B are not going to make war if you restore the magnetic connection between them, and that's a fractal magnetic pattern on the land, same thing, harmonic inclusiveness. And that's all at goldenmean.info/peaceuniversity.
Well, Dan, I see that we don't have breaks scheduled in today, so I'd like to suggest that we each take a 2-minute break and come right back. I've got 11:35. I'm sure it's 8:35 for you. So why don't we put this on pause for 2 minutes since we skipped over the breaks. I just can't go for 2 hours without breaks.
Great.
Oh, hey, there's the break right now, right on cue. There we go. All right, folks, we'll be right back in a couple of minutes. More with Dan Winter after this short break.
Thank you.
Well, good morning. Welcome back. Or in Dan's case, good evening. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris broadcasting on Veterans Radio, Veterans Today Radio, and on www.freedomslips.com, Revolution Radio Studio B. So welcome back, everyone. Today is Tuesday, May 26, 2015, and my guest is Daniel Winter, electrical engineer extraordinaire, let me just say, because you're not the typical electrical engineer. You are head and shoulders above the typical electrical engineer, and your grasp and understanding of the new physics is above and beyond reproach. Now I've got a question for you, and it's about plasma, because you know, you've mentioned cold plasma. I understand what the conventional physics definition of plasma is, and usually it's heated. High energy, reflective of heat. How is cold plasma different? And how is what is different that Mr. Keshe refers to as plasma? Because I think we're dealing with three facets of what may be the same thing, or three facets of three very different things, because I've been trying to decipher this here since our first meeting.
It's exactly the right question, as usual, Mike. Precisely a good question. It's true that in physics, plasma is, first of all, in physics, plasma is 99.99% of the universe. That's clear. Plasma is essentially a cloud of charge. Charge is effectively the ether. It is the centripetal, or it is the compression and rarefaction of the ether, is called charge. In a cloud of charge, which is dense enough to light up, is what physics usually thinks of as a plasma field. And the reason that physics normally considers plasma as warm or hot is because normally it takes heat to excite it. Otherwise, it wouldn't continue to glow and stay in one place. Now, if there is something centripetal, then suddenly a plasma can be cool, hence cold plasma. And there's immense conversation, of course, in spiritual tradition and in history and in oral tradition, that, you know, the cold fire, the plasma, the fire that does not consume, this is the essence of spiritual magic, you know. And in fact, cold plasma is the kind of holy grail of plasma research in general. And I think the reason that physics doesn't know what enables a plasma field to still hang together and not have to be heated is because physics is unaware of what makes anything centripetal functionally. And we now know what that is. It's called phase conjugation.
Well, let's talk for a minute, because define centripetal so the listeners can understand the concept. I get it. This isn't for me. This is for the listeners out there who may not be familiar with the term.
Oh, that's good. We need to be clear and simple. The centripetal field is essentially implosive. It is the opposite of explosive. So something that creates a suction towards center for charge, you know, keeping the tornado focused, as it were, is called restored centripetal forces. It is implosion science. Our group is called the Implosion Group. It starts with the work of Victor Schauberger on implosion, for example. So to make a field centripetal means something is holding the vortex towards center, implosively, opposite of explosion. And so to then move on in your question, comparison to Dr. Keshe, Keshe is rotating a plasma, a gas field, which is centered around monoatomic elements. And that's important because monoatomic elements are a name for atoms which have become electrically stable in a monoatom state, the most famous of which is probably monoatomic gold. But for study, it also instructive is monoatomic carbon, famously called Buckminster fullerene, and very useful to our conversation here because Buckminster fullerene, which is the hottest subject in chemistry today, practically, is famously named for Bucky Fuller, whom I knew very well personally, because of its dodecaecosa geodesic structure. So suddenly monoatomic carbon and copper and other monoatomic elements are famous because they're basically geodesic dodecaecosa. We have a kit for that, goldenmean.info/kit. It's called the Star Mother Kit, which is infinite 3D stellation dodecaecosa, which is I've recently proved is the geometry of hydrogen. So effectively, what's making Keshe's plasma field centripetal and able to hang together as cold plasma is the implosive charge due to the conjugate geometry of monoatomic elements. And hence, you have all this magic because then you rotate these, you know, cold plasma gases. And we know, people who study this, that if you rotate a conjugator, you make propulsion. It's a powerful thing. You implode. And this is behind many of these technologies, which I think Keshe understood intuitively, but doesn't describe very well from an engineering viewpoint.
Well, that was one of my conversations with you and Keshe both when we were in Verona in Italy there at his house, was that we need a new vocabulary because the vocabulary that we're using is in conflict with it. Mm-hmm. And we get the conventional physicists out there who we need to recruit, who we need to educate, who we need to illuminate as to what both of your fields of work are. We don't want to alienate them. And the way that Keshe describes a plasma, these guys tune them out. And they discount him as he didn't know what a plasma is. This guy is, you know, blowing smoke.
His language wasn't helpful. He had some good intuitions, but his language. And I think people could benefit from looking back at ancient tradition again. That, you know, the Ark of the Covenant was famously had those gold angels on the lid, making a spark gap from which the Essenes used as their moneymaker cash cow to make monoatomic gold, the white powder, which was found all over Egypt. And the reason that particular quality of electrical spark, called a phase conjugate dielectric, is the key to making monoatomic gold is because that electric field enables the gold atom to suddenly become stable as a monoatom. And that's essentially implosion.
Well, the one thing that I have to credit you with is that you made my understanding of the Keshe technology possible. The way he was talking, I wasn't getting it. I just wasn't. You know, I mean, my undergrad studies were in solid state physics, material science. I mean, I'm not a dope, but the way he was phrasing things, the choice of words, you had the insight to bridge the gap and made it so that I could understand it. And I'm really, really grateful for that because I really think Keshe has something. I just don't think he explains it worth a darn.
Yeah, and it's similar to Priori because Priori couldn't explain a principle. He ended up losing it as well. And interestingly, I mean, we have an article about this. It's at fractalfield.com/propulsion. And there down below, you'll see a picture of the rotating GANS plasma gas reactors from Keshe. And we saw it. They're purportedly making a bit of thrust propulsion. But we actually show the equations why that particular spiral on the torus created by the monoatomics actually makes propulsion. And this is so instructive. You know, we have a whole Facebook page which is very popular about this. It was entitled, "The Information NASA Requires in Order to Use the Most Elegant Form of Propulsion, : namely, why does an object fall to the ground? If NASA knew, then.
Well, you know, this is so funny because Cash wouldn't even concede that this is propulsion. Yeah. No, it's not propulsion. It's, you know, he's giving his explanation. Oh, man. I said, new vocabulary. We need to develop a new vocabulary to make the physics that you're working on, that Cash is working on, understandable to the rest of the scientists and physicists out there, so that this can be experimented with, developed, productized, whatever, you know, on a wide scale basis. You know, this.
Yeah,
you know,
it's really ironic because the core to, we were talking about flame in the mind, and we now know that longitudinal interferometry is, you know, how you make a flame in your mind, literally the physics of psychokinesis. And, you know, this is a longitudinal wave. It's a conjugation. Well, and yet that information is the ultimate threat to national security, because if you knew that, then you wouldn't need atom smashers and suddenly CERN would be obsolete. And so what is this? It's a threat to national security, and it's the only way to get actually immortal psychokinesis. So, you know, the same applies.
Let me just say something. It's not a threat to national security as we think of security. It's a threat to the moneyed vested interests who don't want to lose everything because they've malinvested over the millennium in all the wrong technologies.
Ultimately, fear will prevent us from understanding our own immortality. But so then to apply that analog to Keshe, you see that if you study again the article, there's two PDFs at that fractalfield.com/propulsion. And you see the history there. When the Germans learned how to make propulsion at De Glacke, the Nazi bell, they were studying the detailed engineering prints from the Vimana of the ancient Vedas and how it flew. And how it did fly is quite simple, actually. You have a highly high fluid inertia from a high specific gravity mercury.
What the Germans were calling red mercury, I believe.
Exactly. You're close. And so the mercury is now rotating in a spiral on a torus. And Nassim Haramein tried this as well indirectly, although he didn't have the equation, which is called the Navier-Stokes equations, to optimize. And you'll see examples in our PDF. And so if you get the right spiral for this high inertial mercury pumping in a spiral on a torus, on a donut, which is the shadows of that are called Hebrew and Sanskrit, by the way, because you need to make propulsion. You're not going to steer when you dream or when you die. Same physics. That's why psychokinesis equals the ultimate, you know, psychotechnology. So then what they did is they had, and this is what you're right about the red mercury, that the Nazis used a certain wetting agent to make a iron powder soluble in the mercury, and that's what turned it red. And now you have high liquid specific gravity inertia plus high magnetic flux density. Now, if you pump that in the optimized angle of the spiral on the torus, hint, the origin of Hebrew and Sanskrit, animated goldenmean.info/DNA ring, suddenly the efficiency with which you create propulsion goes through the roof, literally. Now, this is why it's so important that we understand the physics, because it's the key to our own psychokinesis and immortality. If you look at when we had four highly trained, this is called Ophanum Enochian, this is what John Dee learned. They were visualizing these alphabet letters, Aleph, Beit, etc. And you'd hold this sacred alphabet letter one at a time in your mind, and this would choose the angle of the magnetic donut, which is your optical cortex. And by holding that fixed, the magnetic donut around your brain goes to a very specific angle. And then, just like horse whisperer, then you stop your foot and you release it and you throw that magnetic donut at the angle of 3D tilt, which is called the Hebrew letter. And those magnetic donuts converge towards center. And I tell you, in Torino, the magnetic wind at the center of that ritual would make you quite dizzy and would, in fact, blow the doors off a church because the air pressure changes. So what's called casting a spell is the exact same physics of converging those magnetic domains to make them implode and conjugate. Well, and that's
Let me give you a real-life example of what you just talked about. I was in Syria, in Damascus, in December, a couple weeks before I met with you and Kesh in Verona, Italy. And I was privileged to witness the whirling dervishes. And just being in their presence, it brought me to an emotional state that I was on the verge of tears. It was profoundly emotionally powerful, and I didn't understand it until having subsequent conversations with you and others as to what the effect of the dervishes are.
There's a famous magazine article that talks about gravity making wormholes using whirling dervishes to teach the physics. And basically, the mythology fits the physics because, the dervishes told that if your intention is pure, then you will not get dizzy. And the way you purify your intention is to work at not getting dizzy. So what is the physics? The physics is the fact that your thought, your attention to center and present can only keep returning to center if, in fact, you're connected with the perfectly shareable wave at the center of it all. So, and that's where extreme heart coherence is, in fact, pure intention for the same reason, because implosion is always the same physics.
Well, Dan, we've got a break coming up. When we come back, I want to ask you the significance of ancient languages in affecting our mental processes and how we project. So we'll be right back after this short break. More with Dan Winter. Stick with us, folks.
Thank you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on Veterans Today Network, as well as WWW Freedom Slips Revolution Radio Studio B. Today is Tuesday, May 26, 2015. My guest is Dan Winter. Dan, welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
Well, no, thank you. I mean, like I tell you, you're a great guest. And you know what the best thing about this whole job is? It doesn't pay anything for me to do on the radio. I don't make a dime doing this. This is all volunteer. But the best thing is I get to talk to interesting people, and you're right up there. You know,
well,
I mean,
when you become a shareable wave, you get immortal.
Well, it is a pleasure just to have you on and other people and stuff. And like I said, I get to talk to cool people who are out in the real world making things happen. But anyway, let's talk a little bit, because you've mentioned a couple times today in the first hour about how the ancient languages, the letter, the words, the, you know, whatever it is, have an effect upon the field. Why is this? How do we understand this? And can we adapt our current language, our current letters, to have a similar effect? Is this something that is possible for us to learn how to do, or do we have to go back and learn the ancient languages?
Well, from the point of view of physics, your immortality or your sustainability is basically your ability to project plasma, to project charge, to project yourself. This is what we know about death, for example, as Korotkov measured. What you look like after you die is you look like a plasma donut, like ball lightning, basically. It's been measured. And we even know where you go, when and why after death. You're looking for implosion to get yourself projected. They call it a power point in the room. So, you know, ghosts go to very particular places electrically, and you can even measure that to the temperature goes down. There's a cool spot because they've sucked in the energy. So, but let's try to take that from the beginning. What we discovered, I wrote an equation to superpose the self-organizing golden mean spiral on the self-organizing torus donut, the shape of every field effect in physics. And it turns out that if you look at the shadows of that spiral and the torus, and you index the angle at which you look by the tetrahedron, the shadows are Hebrew. And that's the animation's goldenmean.info/DNA ring. It's a You know, it's one of our most popular websites. Millions of people have inspected that. So the physics appears to be that the alphabet letter is teaching you how to control the angle, the tilt angle of the torus of charge of your brain. Basically, you throw the charge envelope, the charge donut of your mind at a certain angle. And if you sequence the angles of donuts nesting, that's called quantum physics. It's obviously that's what physics is about. Molecular physics is the charge donuts nesting. And if you get the angles right, then the donuts bond and you have the origin of chemistry. Chemistry to be named from chem, access to a black hole, how you implode. So ancient alphabets were teaching us the physics of horse whispering, which is to say throwing your weight around, which is to say throwing your donuts around. Basically, the way you're going to communicate is you're going to throw the symmetry elements of charge into a certain sequence that would enable them to implode and therefore hang together and bond. Obviously, conjugate, cast a dream spell, make something that's sustainable. So if you think about, you know, when you dream and when you die, this ancient spiritual mystery is very simple. Your aura is a charge envelope. It's cold plasma. It's called your ka, your boat into the underworld. And your ability to steer that when you dream and when you die determines exactly the same way an astronaut has to know how to shoot the jets out of his spacecraft. And so the way you create a set of vector directions to steer when you dream and you die, it's straight out of the movie Ghost. You know, if you can't harness your passion, you'll never move that penny and your lover won't know you're there. So the way you steer, you know, in a dream or your death, or when you're a shaman, a shaman means plasma projective. The way you project your plasma is you get the angle on the torus right, the spiral on the donut. And if you visualize that, you can throw the ball of charge at such an angle that it would create embedding, nesting, implosion, become centripetal, become psychokinetic, become powerful. So functionally, if you understand the only real purpose of alphabets was to get your charge donuts at the right angle in order to implode them and therefore become sustainable. A practical example, if you take Aleph, Beit, Gimel, Dalet, the Hebrew letters in the right sequence to spell the word Bereshith, the first word of Genesis, and you take that sequence of letters, Beit, Resh, if you looked at the outside of the spiral on the torus, from the outside in, you're the first letter, the shadow of that spiral on the torus, first one you'd see is the shadow of B, Beit. Now, if you walk 1/7 the way towards center and then again look at its center, the new perspective on the same spiral from that point of view is letter Resh, B-R, and et cetera. So when you finally got to the inside, from the outside, inside out as were, and you're now looking from the inside of the donut at the outside, it's the letter Hey, the end of the word Bereshith. So saying the word Bereshith, you have done the turns of mind necessary to turn inside out on the surface of a torus to tie a slipknot, which is called at first, in principle, the origin of thingness, the physics of the origin of creation, mistranslated, you know, in the beginning, the first word of the Bible.
Well, let me ask you a question. Where does this torus exist?
Well, remember, physics is only made of waves. Anybody who imagines there's such a thing as a particle is functionally deluded. The particle is just a packet of waves. And how do those waves travel? Well, obviously, the only self-organizing geometry for waves is toroidal. So physics is only about donuts. There's no other subject to discuss.
Well, I mean, it's just that, you know, we see so many representations out there. Like if you watch this this Thrive movie that came out, very fascinating stuff. But it shows a torus being projected from the human heart and goes, you know, so many feet around us and so many feet tall, and we're at the center of it. I'm just wondering, you know, where does this exist, or is it ubiquitous? Does it exist everywhere all the time, and is there a multitude of them? And you know, how do we make these congruent and coordinate them to act together?
Well, you know, the movie Thrive was beautiful, but extremely simplistic. But the fact is that the voltage wave which causes the heart to fire is, in fact, an infinite series of nested toroids. Basically, to feel someone outside you is if you're inside you, the physics of compassion, your heart literally has to turn inside out recursively. That's what the famous biomedical book on the subject was about. It's called When Time Breaks Down, The Origin of Cardiac Arrhythmia by Arthur T. Winfrey. Now, the point is that your heart is a series of electrical donuts imploding, and if they're nested perfectly embedded, and you take a power spectrum, the EKG, which is how I invented the term heart coherence, and I taught Heart Math Institute how to do it. You take a power spectrum of the EKG, and if you get harmonic inclusiveness there, it means the donuts have all imploded, a little one inside the big one, perfectly. So, practical example. You got Nostradamus, and you know he figured out how to put a phase conjugate mirror on the bottom of his water scrying cup, and he saw the future. But now, in fact, he was at the center of a magnetic pentagram, and Nostradamus was always weeping for those whom he saw, which means his empathy was sucking, imploding the future into him. And the name of the guy who steered the time chair at Montauk was called the time empath for that reason. So empathy and embedding is that implosive process. So that's a practical example of donuts.
So an empathetic process is an implosive process. So
exactly.
Whereas a selfish process would be the opposite, in this case, an explosive process.
So, the idea of what is a perfectly shareable wave, the reason measuring heart coherence, I invented how to do that, it's called the SEPSTRM, second order power spectrum. So that little peak of when your heart coherence increases, it correlates to pure intention, or it is literally a functional lie detector. It's a way you can decide if you say yes when she says or he says, "Will you marry me?" It is a functional lie detector. It's a functional measurement of kinesiology, which is muscle testing, because your heart cannot become phase coherent unless you have pure intention, because biology, in biomechanics, a perfectly shareable wave is coherence perfected, which is called phase conjugate or implosive. In other words, you can't gather a lot of waves to you unless those waves join you, because they know that by joining you, they will become shareable, projectable, which is why when you walk by a mountain and you ask the charge of that mountain to come to you, the sword from the stone, so to speak, the charge of that mountain will come to you if it knows that by joining you, it becomes sustainable, immortal, it becomes perfectly shareable. In the same way that when you drive a carload of kids past a running river, they all want to pee.
No, that's a very funny comment, but you about the kids. But you've just defined what it is when two human beings, you know, typically men and women, actually have a genuine bond, a genuine connection. You just defined it. That was a very eloquent and beautiful thing you just said there, Dan.
And it's sort of the physics of the truth, which is you only fall in love with pure intention, because in fact, love as a name for perfect embedding, long wave phi ratio, lo phi, is this process of joining a shareable wave. So if you want to be lovable, what you need to do clearly is radiate a shareable intention. So for example, you know, if your date is kind and compassionate to everyone they see, you will fall in love with them. Where if they're nasty to other people and only nice to you, well, that's a bad indicator, because that is not a shareable wave.
No, absolutely.
And the electrical engineering of that is this famous paper. It's called Alice in Barium Titanate Land. It's on the physics of phase conjugate dielectric field, in which they discovered that implosive or phase conjugate dielectric, you know, plasma charge fields literally find each other at a distance like they're self-aware. This is what Christians call the quality of grace. This ball of plasma over there will seek this ball of plasma over here, because both of them share the common core physics of pure implosion, which is the very nature of how biology collects perfectly shareable waves, which is the only form of immortality for all of biology. So it just means that when you've distilled the pure principle from your day by reviewing your day like a movie backwards at night, and you can relax in front of it, it means you've digested your day and therefore made it shareable. And therefore, you know, you've distilled the pure principle, and the core of your DNA loves that. And you don't have to die if you do that every day.
Well, you know, that is a fascinating thing. And just last week, I took a drive down to Phoenix, Arizona, and I drove back from Oregon. It's, you know, 1,000+ miles each way. And throughout that time, I was reviewing things. I was taking stock of the last several years of my life. On the way down there, I was looking at all the bad things. On the way back, I was looking at all the good things. And I arrived down there. I was kind of tense, kind of uptight about things. And on the way back, I was the most relaxed, calm, collected guy you'd ever want to meet. And it really is amazing that, and it's something that I would encourage everyone to do, is at the end of your day, before you turn out the lights, before you go to bed, just review your day. Look at the good. Look at the bad. Review it. And like Dan just said, you have to make yourself shareable to the rest of this universe, because we are all connected.
And this, that spiritual exercise was that if you keep interrupting the film of your day playing in front of you, it means you haven't digested the memory, which means you haven't found the shareable wave there. Whereas if you're totally relaxed and you can play the film without interrupting, that means relaxation is equivalent to the superconductive implosive moment. The neat thing is that spirituality has always known the quality of grace is, in fact, always detecting who has pure intention. But now we understand the science of that. The science means that don't expect your inner voice to work in a metal building with bad air, because the capacitance is not a shareable wave. It's not fractal. Whereas if you live in a building made of biological material and you're surrounded by people that are having bliss experiences, then obviously all the living plasma will want to go there, because it will create the critical mass that is bliss itself.
Well, you're right about that. And I think on a previous radio show, I shared with you that I lived in an all-metal travel trailer for about 3 years.
Yeah, I remember.
And it aged me. I'm telling you what, the two and a half, 3 years I was there aged me 10. It was really one of the worst times of my life for a number of reasons. But to understand that there is a biological effect that's by being isolated from bioactive materials.
It's so simple. And that's why if people understood the need for living biologic architecture, which is our curriculum for living architecture, goldenmean.info/architecture, that tells you what is the design for where to have birth, where to have death. In fact, it tells you why a seed will die when you drop it in a steel or aluminum cup. You don't want your children to be there either. And the science is so simple, because the capacitance of the steel or aluminum is poisonous to every living thing, simply because it's opposite to harmonic inclusive. It is, in fact, harmonic exclusive, which means the charge is not radiant. It's not distributed. The capacitance that is life cannot breathe through it. Whereas if you have high dielectric materials, organic architecture, you're wearing hemp clothing, then the capacitance can breathe through it efficiently, and life can embed there. That's why Steiner was right. In the school, the children must touch and be surrounded only by natural biologic materials, and not touch anything plastic or steel or synthetic, because their aura can't embed in it.
Now that's fascinating, and you look at the new desks that the kids have. They're going to have a formica top, steel, and a plastic seat. Whereas when I was a kid, they were made out of wood. They had wooden chairs, wooden desktops, and believe me, just give me a sharp knife, and I would embed myself in that wooden desktop. That's a joke.
The reason is that your aura is basically a capacitive field, and if it touches steel or aluminum, it dies immediately. And so your aura can't grow in that environment. And therefore, you can't generate inertia in a centripetal force. You cannot become the tornado. So, you know, all of the ancients who lived to be hundreds of years old, they all did it in a cave, and none of them did it in a synthetic building, because it destroys your aura, basically. So the need for biologic architecture is fundamental to the understanding of life itself. That's why these people who claim to be biology teachers and architecture teachers, and they do it in a steel and aluminum building, they're demonstrating their stupidity.
Well, the happiest I've ever been is when I lived in an adobe house.
There you go.
And
exactly.
That was the happiest time of my entire life. And I built it I caused it to be built, but it was just the most wonderful environment I've ever been in. But let's talk about this some more. Is how do we teach ourselves? Where can we get the resources so that each of us can become this tornado you talk about?
Mm-hmm. Well, just to finish the thought on the architecture, even as it applies to clothing, fractalclothing.net. The core principle is called high dielectric constant, which is simply to say that if you're making a capacitor between the two metal plates, the insulator that determines how resonant the material is called the dielectric. When you ring that capacitor like a bell, if it rings with more energy than the hammer that you hit it with, called the voltage, then is by definition such a high dielectric constant that that capacitor, called a pine cone, is actually getting voltage from gravity. So a zero-point energy collector is actually a high dielectrical phase conjugate dielectric capacitor. The point is that if you wear clothes, you know, raw, unbleached hemp dipped in seawater, baked in the sun, this how you make the ultimate capacitor. You wear clothing like that, your aura is delighted. It unpacks, and then Jesus knew instantly when somebody touched his robe because his aura, he felt the capacitance move because he was centripetal inside that robe. Now, if that robe had been made of polyester, Jesus could not have done it.
Well, that's pretty funny, and it really does give a different perspective to the hemp clothing. And in addition to which, you know, hemp is a more durable fiber than cotton is.
And it's going to save the world. Whoever grows hemp is going to rule the world. It's clear.
Well, I try to wear cotton clothes as much as possible because I just like how it feels better to me than wearing anything of nylon or polyester or any of the synthetics. But you know, sometimes you just can't get there from here. You know, that's the world we live in. You have to make an effort to do these things and bring these things into your life.
Yeah, the key is the dielectric constant. So basically, the fabric becomes the ultimate antenna as a capacitor. In fact, hemp fibers is how Phil Callahan measured tree harmonics to find out which one was alive because it was getting Schumann harmonics and which one was not. It's the ultimate fractal antenna. And if you apply that to building design, then basically your clothing and your building is becoming an amplifier for your aura getting bigger, more centripetal, and that's the answer to your question about how to become the bigger tornado.
Okay, well, let's also, because you brought up gravity a moment ago, and, you know, I've listened to you discuss gravity, what it is, how to create it, how to reverse the effects of it. So I'd like you to address that, because you had the first explanation that I've ever heard that really made crystal clear sense to me. Is that, all right, this, whenever you described it, and I said, now this resonates with me. This is, now I understand what gravity is. And Keshe did the same thing with me on whenever he was describing what superconductors are and how they work. So, you know, I pay attention to what my intuition tells me, because often, more often than not, it's correct.
This was the joke that we played on NASA when we said, well, if they knew why an object falls to the ground, then they could actually harness propulsion. But it's really quite simple. I wrote a new equation that proved that the radii of hydrogen were a precise golden ratio exponent, a golden spiral down to Planck length of time. So the top-down view of hydrogen is the same pentagram, which is the top-down view of DNA. It's for obvious reasons. And therefore, the reason that hydrogen makes gravity is because of golden ratio, called phase conjugation. Why? Well, if you look at the top-down view of the golden spiral, which is hydrogen and DNA and also galaxy structures and planetary orbitals, all based on golden ratio, the physics of black holes, the golden spiral allows the waves of charge, where they cross, visualize a nest of pentagrams, where the waves of charge cross on the golden spiral, they can add and multiply recursively, constructively, not just wavelength, but phase velocity. That just means recursive addition is multiplication, which is called recursive heterodyny. And when phase velocities add and multiply constructively, only golden ratio allows that, then as the phase velocities, the wavefront speeds, are adding and multiplying constructively, only permitted by golden ratio, then the compression of charge towards center becomes the acceleration of charge towards center, because suddenly the phase velocities are adding and multiplying constructively. So the wave speed, a portion of the inertia of the wave of charge approaching center, has suddenly turned compression of charge into acceleration of charge towards center.
an acceleration of charge toward center is, as Einstein proved, the only definition of the gravity. So gravity exists because charge waves can add and multiply constructively due to Golden ratio. Therefore, Golden ratio, called fractality, is the cause of gravity. And I'm not the first to say that fractality causes gravity, but I'm the first to explain why. And once you know that, you can make that spiral work and you can make gravity. Here's a practical example. When you're doing your Sufi dervish turn, if you're wearing synthetic shoes, you're not electrically connected to ground and your gravity don't work so good, you're going to get dizzy. Whereas if you're wearing biologic material at the bottom of your shoe and the capacitance gets through, it's called grounding. Read the book Earthing. You're much more likely to be able to harness gravity and you won't get dizzy.
Well, whenever I saw the dervishes, they appeared to be dressed in all white cotton. Now, it may have been something else, but it appeared to be as white a cotton as you could find.
Cotton's good, hemp's better. But yeah.
Okay. All right. And that's the thing. You know, hemp's gotten a bad rap because of the DEA and the war on drugs. That's just an unfortunate circumstance because, you know, and then you look at DuPont and their invention of nylon and how they didn't want to have to compete with hemp farmers for really the best rope that was ever made. One of the best fibers is hemp, you know, and they thought they could corner the market. But I digress.
So that's an old story. They took out Bangladesh. Very sad.
Yeah, they did. And you know, that's sad. And Bangladesh has yet to recover.
That's right.
From that. And, you know, you know, corporate compulsion to take us from the natural state of being where we're sustainable, we're happy, we're spiritually at rest, we're mentally at rest, we're physically healthy, and try to push us into this other world. I mean, where do you see this coming from?
Well, you know, it's doing the conspiracy theory thing can get a little boring after a while, too. I think the issue is obviously education. That, you know, if money is simply a symbol for energy, namely human energy, then therefore perfected distribution of energy, namely money, could actually be a good thing, which is to say fractal economics, and we have a new website on that. But fractal economics is basically the discovery that the highest level of money is actually the highest level of service. But in order for that to work, there has to be education. So, for example, if DuPont had understood that hemp had some of the most vital DNA on the planet, and they wouldn't then therefore have made it illegal for their own shallow idea of corporate greed, but in fact could have participated. The same way that if Monsanto understood that DNA gets stupid in monoculture, they might not make Monsanto mistake. So it does boil down to education.
Well, it really does. I mean, you look at a number of corporate interventions, and you look at how this country was put through prohibition during the 1920s, late 1920s, and most people don't realize that the reason we had prohibition was to force Detroit away from alcohol as a fuel and onto petroleum products as a fuel. And most people don't understand that. They've forgotten their history. Yeah. Hey, Dan, we got another break. We'll be right back, folks, in a couple minutes. More with Dan Winter. We'll be right back after this. Stick with us, please.
2 minute break. Last half. 2 hours. Yeah, I'm on Mike Harris, Freedom Slips Radio, and Veterans Today Radio. Oh. Mike Harris is streaming both networks.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on Veterans Today Network, as well as www.freedomslips.com, Revolution Radio Studio B. Today is Tuesday, May 26, 2015, and my guest is Dan Winter, electrical engineer extraordinaire. And Dan, I got to say, you're much more than an electrical engineer. You really are a unique among that educational specialty. I got to give credit where credit's due.
Well, my background here, I was in electrical engineering at University of Detroit. Pretty famous curriculum, but then I became the director of the psychophysiology lab, polygraphy, and studying the electrical physics of emotion was how I got started in this field with Al Ax and the inventors of biofeedback. So that was my background. And then later when I had these Kundalini experiences, I knew enough of the electrical background to really see where it was going. But what I prepared for the climax this evening were some notes about what I call solutions to religion wars. What do you think?
Let's go for it. But let me interject something first. I've received a number of emails from people who want to know when they can be they want to volunteer for any studies you need on the Priori device. I got one gentleman who says he's got dialysis three times a week. He'd like to take a ride on it. I've got other people who have indicated other similar type issues to verify that if this really has the healing potential that we think it does. You've got eager volunteers out there. Just wanted to pass that along to you.
Well, thank you. We take this very seriously. I can be reached at info@fractalfield.com. We have a secret prototype Western Canada, but now clinical trials beginning in the next 2 to 3 months, Atlanta area, South France, and London. It's the plan at this point. And so we could have that conversation.
Well, I think that is very wise to distribute your studies across various locations. I think that's brilliant. It makes it much harder to squash or derail your efforts, and I applaud you for your foresight on that. But let's go ahead and talk about the finale of the evening, and that is how do we bring these religious wars to an end?
Yeah, and it's interesting that the theory of what would be a solution to religion war. Is not unlike what's happening at the center of the Priori plasma. You have a profound implosion field, and it's profoundly healing. So what does that have to do with religion wars? Well, if you look at, even the word, the city of Jerusalem, which is obviously the center of religion wars, the root of the term we've talked about, Uru Asa Elm, Jerusalem, Uru means of the ancient dragon or Draco blood, ages of Uras, Anton Parks. And Asa means the queen of or the royalty of. And the El means the place of the phase shift, translation of vorticity or implosion. So Uru Asa Elm is where the royal line of the ancient dragon royalty would go to make the phase shift and, as it were, plasma project in and out of here, as it were, Stargate. Now, Anton Parks, whom I recommend, antonparks.com, particularly Secret of the Dark Stars, now in English, he uses the term Dirana for Stargate, which is really what the temple was, Jerusalem, the Temple of Jerusalem. So why is that the subject for religion wars? If we look at the history story of Akhenaten, Akhenaten had a homework assignment from the supposedly advanced ETs, the Syrians, if you believe, he was to build Amarna, which was a Dirana, a stargate, a portal, a bliss temple. Why was that so important? Because if a group of people are able to have a bliss process in a place which focuses their charge, which is what this temple does, it implodes, it converges the charge lines, so there's centripetal implosive and plasma projective. If that's done correctly, that whole group of people can, in fact, project themselves through the sun. Now, that sounds advanced. It sounds esoteric. It sounds theoretical. But no, it's very real. You could look at our solar shamans e-group, Solar Heart Community at yahoogroups.com. A whole bunch of shamans in Bentoff, my Kundalini teacher, they all did it. They had their plasma, their center of project, and they can go through the center of the sun. They perceive it like an eyeball, and it's cool and inviting. It's a beautiful thing. Anyway, the point is that the only way out of kindergarten, a long way from downtown, is to basically project your plasma from the planet. How do you do that? You use a group that has trained to lucid dream together, and you need that group. That's called your soul group. You form that soul group. You have your bliss and your agony and your ecstasy together. Eventually, you can dream together as a group, project your plasma, the definition of shaman, and eventually learn how to assemble your memories as a bubble of charge and project them out through the nearest star. And that's the only way to graduate from kindergarten. So, in fact, the war over the sacred sites, the Jerusalem, is in fact the unconscious memory that the only way out of here is access to Stargate. Now, the fact is that Jerusalem as a Stargate is broken. It don't work anymore. So what we need now is the people who understand the science of how soul groups achieve immortality together. And when that collective bliss is understood, there's no need for religion wars because everyone has access to what they need for that immortality. It's the true science of spirituality.
Let me give you a sidebar note. And I had Gordon Duff on the radio show yesterday from VeteransToday.com. What's happened in Palmyra, in Syria, is that this is where the second temple of Solomon has been discovered. Mm-hmm. And that's why the Israelis are moving there so aggressively. And now the Syrian army, as well with with Russian backing now, is countering this right now. This because this has been something that has been obscured from public view for, you know, almost 2,000, more than 2,000 years now. And now this the second temple of Solomon, which was allegedly built by jinns or spirits or aliens, demons, whatever you want to call them, but it's there and it's real. So if the Stargate in Jerusalem is no longer functional, that puts an immense amount of importance on this town of Palmyra in Syria.
Well, those who forget the sins of history are condemned to repeat them. The word Syria is Assyria, A-S-S-A-U, Asa-Uru, which is the origin of the word Uruk, Iraq, and Uru Asa-Elam. So if we forgot who an Uru was, probably we haven't learned the lesson of history. Now, an Uru is a very specific bloodline. It's called Draco Alpha Draconis. It's what's behind the term Anunnaki. They had a blood chemistry. It was lipid oil-based. They breathed in nitrogen, et cetera, et cetera. They breathed out cyanogen. They had carbon, bone, and silk, and earth. We know a lot about their blood chemistry. And if we don't know what their agenda was in building Stargate Temple, the soul of Mon, the Solomon's Temple, then obviously we're going to be like bees who, having forgotten how to make honey, are having a war over the last place they remember there was honey, which is bliss.
Well, that may be sad, but true. But you know, the Israelis are looking at this from a different point of view. They want to destroy the place, and the Syrian army wants to protect it. It's really a strange conundrum that we're in politically. But I don't want to take us away from this dialogue about how to in the religious wars, because I think that is imperative for the survival of humanity.
Exactly, and you know, you have the two branches of the Muslim tradition having a war over whether it was Muhammad's nephew or not, which is such childishness. And yet you have the guy who taught Muhammad the Muslim tradition. His name was Gabriel. Now, the same angel Gabriel is the guy who taught Mary, you know, how to found Christianity. And the same Gabriel is the same person, same entity, who came to Joseph Smith and the origin of the Mormons. So maybe we'd like to know what Gabriel's agenda was, if it's the same guy, which apparently the Mormons know what he looked like. You call it a white salamander. It's a plasma. It's a advanced draconian. And we know what he was there for. We know why. They burnt their genetic records in alphabet letters on copper and gold scrolls, which the Mormons know all about. That's what Joseph Smith was studying when he, the old pharaonic Egyptian, which when he discovered the angel of Moroni. So the point is, the genetic agenda was how to make a DNA that had the psychokinetic access to bliss, which is called the fall, you know, the Nephilim, that whole story, which was basically how to get enough charge in DNA to make it implode. So as the Italians who cheered when they figured out that the definition of culture was not the color of your shoe polish and your wine. No, the definition of culture is if you know how to teach your young people how to have a bliss experience. That is the only real definition of culture, because it's the only doorway to the immortal, actually, which is to say how to teach your young people how to attract charge, which is Celestine prophecy. All human interaction is about charge, you know, who you kiss and who you hug, because your ability to attract charge determines whether you actually become functionally immortal.
Well, that really is the keys to the kingdom there. And so whenever you say functionally immortal, how are you defining that? What is your description there as to someone who is functionally immortal? And I know this is a very arduous task to get there, but please try to explain.
Well, a perfectly shareable wave has achieved perfected charge distribution. The term for that in electrical engineering is phase conjugate or fractal. And that perfected distribution of charge is the triplet state electron and electronic biology in cancer. It's fractality. It's the perfect rose petal shape for waves. Now, that then defines success at death. If, you know, if the burial ground's magnetic map looks like a rose, the Hopi understood this very well at Old Arabi, then, in fact, the distribution of charge is successful. So if you look at the physics of the death process, we know exactly the four sequence geometrics you see at death. It's called the map to dying. Well, they're called the Heinrich Kluwe form constants, lattice, cobweb, tunnel, spiral. You can see the graphic animations, goldenmean.info/immortality. And so the reason you see those four distinct sequence, lattice, cobweb, tunnel, spiral, at death, it's proven archetypically, is because the plasma field of your DNA is preparing you to compress, implode into the black hole tunnel for perfected charge distribution, which is called immortality, or voices of ancestors, or communion of saints, or collective unconscious. It's the physics of the conjugate dielectric, the imploded field. And when you join that field, there's a discipline, which is to say, you must be part of every wave that's perfectly shareable, and then you can join the communion of saints because you understand the rules under the extended family of cousins, you know? And that's why the Hopi or the Aboriginals, they would not begin their day without first checking with ancestor voices. And Karatkov clearly measured, you do not make phone calls to ancestors except in a very particularly electrically measurable environment he called fractal air, basically sacred space. So the whole access to ancestral memories has very good electrical engineering.
Well, that's... You know, this is what people need to understand, and you know, I think you're correct that if we could get this, that the paradigm shift on the planet would be so profound, and I liked your comment there as to what civilization truly is, and that is the ability to teach your children how to experience, how to achieve a state of bliss, and I think that is. No, it's words of wisdom. I'm almost left speechless here. I talk not for a living, but I talk every day to a lot of people. So it's hard to get me here. So Dan, let's talk about the things that are going on right now. And let's kind of review a little bit. You've got the Priori device, which is going to be coming up and running in the what next, you know, 60, 90 days for clinical trials. You've got the heart ring application that's available. You've got the imploder. Now, do you currently have what I'll call a home version? You can use the imploder as a shower head or maybe on your sink in your kitchen or something. Do you have that version?
Imploder shower is the vortex without the heavy magnetics section. And that vortex is itself very powerful, particularly if you have hard water or conductive water, because the charge field around the vortex will, in fact, be bioactive. So yes, imploder shower is quite inexpensive at theimploder.com. And then we have another version called the triploder, which is just three vortex nested. And that's super powerful for example, biodynamics, where you have the piezoelectric biodynamic preparations. They call it dynamization. It's also ideal for idealized mixing, and it's used in irrigation, spraying, et cetera, very famous in Russia for that. So there's at least three different versions here, yes.
Okay, so let me ask you another question about that. That is, you, what do the magnetics add? You know, for the agricultural versions, you've got the heavy magnetics in there. What benefit does that bring to the agricultural issue in addition to the imploder technology itself?
The magnetics is the super imploder. It's quite heavy. It's almost 17 pounds. And it is the most powerful and most documented growth agricultural water treatment on the planet. And magnetics treatment for agriculture has been proven by every university and government that studied. We have many of the studies around theimploder.com. The difference is that the nozzle itself is bioactive if the water's conductive. For example, a little trace salt or trace mineral in the water is very helpful to the vortex because it makes it capacitive. But when you add the magnetic section, and we are delivering 3,500 Gauss from eight of these huge, what we call conjugate magnetics, it's just like the rotor in a permanent magnet motor. When the water molecule is charged, comes out spinning at the base of that nozzle, and right there enters this super dense 3,500 Gauss, and we have two opposing centripetal, profoundly chosen North Pole magnetics. The polarity is critical. Then that enables the water molecule to become, as it were, stable in the monoatom state or stable in the monomolecular state, which means basically spin density, laminar coherence, extreme solubility effect. So almost all of our, we have multiple laboratory and dozens of studies, all of our results reports in our science is based on the superimploder, which includes both the magnetics and the vortex.
Gotcha. And benefits, if people would get one of these household size ones, what are they going to see different? How is this going to improve? What's it going to do for them?
Well, in the shower, people report feeling energized and they love it. And of course, the vortex is beautiful. And you can actually play with the ponytail shape of the output vortex column spin stream because it's actually self-aware. It responds to touch. It's an amazing thing. You can see the animation at theimploder.com. So it's very energizing. But for the really powerful effect in the house, it would be the super imploder. And we have many examples of whole house installations, but you can put it in the shower and the sink too. It's standard 3/4-inch fittings. But the point is, with the super imploder, you'll have hydration, solubility. So people actually sell and share the water very commonly because it's so energizing. And it's better than a water softener. Also, in most cases, you need as much as 30% less water for irrigation and agriculture as well, because obviously wetter water requires less water. So there's lots of benefits.
And in the human body, if you have this wetter water, I've had another guest on, Dr. Richard Allen Miller, saying that many of the ailments that are related to aging, you get compression in your disc between your vertebrae. And he says that's a hydration problem. If you were properly hydrated, that wouldn't be occurring. You wouldn't have shrunk that half inch.
That's right. And so hydration is basically solubility. And we do have a lot of people report, anything from gray hair solutions to back problems. Because if you get hydrated, get the water back in, hydration is the opposite of aging by definition. Particularly sports players have immense problems with hydration. That's why they're using ImplodeRespond.com. So yes, that super solubility is a solution to many, many health problems. And even, Albert Zengorgi, Electronic Biology and Cancer, was the same story. Highly spin-dense water is the solution.
Well, I want you to take a minute, give out your website again, and give out the one for the iPhone application, because I think that's something that's fascinating. That I think, I don't know how many people, I don't know what percentage of the listeners have iPhones or not, but the demo you gave to me of that when we were in Verona, Italy, I found fascinating. I mean, within seconds, this thing had my not just my pulse rate, but it had the waveform of my heart output right on the iPhone screen. I go, what? It was absolutely fascinating. And then you instructed me to, try to slow your breathing, watch what changes. And I didn't realize that I was so healthy. I had a pulse rate of 54 beats a minute at the time, which indicated I must have been pretty fit.
Well, it's true. As you get more fit and exercise more, your heart rate gets lower. But the neat thing about the breathing cue is that you can move your heart rate, low frequency HRV, to where you like. And so you can choose where your musical fundamental of your heart is and therefore join your lover, your tantra, etc., and do empathy training by choice with a breathing cue. It's the yoga of coherent breath, and the heart coherence is displayed as the amplitude of that primary peak. The website is heartsring.com, and that's for the iPhone app, which will soon be also available for iPad. And the major imploder water technology is theimploder.com. For my book, which is the core science of all of this, Origins of Biologic Negentropy, Fractal Space Time, the website is simply fractalfield.com. And the original index of articles is goldenmean.info. We have a major update on many of our technologies at fractalfield.com/conjugatetechnologies. And there you'll also see some of the propulsion and energy technologies. So we have a lot of great stuff happening. It's wonderful.
Well, you really do. And I wish you every success in all of these ventures. I truly do, because I think they're critical for humanity to move forward. And we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left, Dan. You know, I want to give this to you, to close out. What are your takeaways? What do you want the listeners to leave knowing and understanding?
Well, it really boils down to living your day in such a way that you continuously gather charge. That means, you know, you wake up, you did your yoga, your deep breathing, you freeze your squeeze your fresh fruit, you had live food for breakfast, you did everything to enable your body's aura to get bigger. Because basically, all your life choices are based on whether they're going to grow your aura. If you find yourself living in spaces where the air is dead, the magnetics are dead, and the environment's dead, your aura is not going to make it. So you need to actively make the choices to be in a charge-dense environment until your aura can eventually grow and grows that tornado-steering inertia. Carlos Castaneda called it finding your place of power in every room. Eventually, as you use your hands and you douse a little bit, you can find the place of charge in every building, in every place, and gradually you're always walking around growing your aura. And that is not selfish, because ultimately you're becoming the shareable wave. So the more you feel others' feelings, the more you embed in their aura and more your tornado grows.
Well, it's kind of one of those things is, you know, whenever you're on an airplane and they give you the little safety thing when the mask falls down, put yours on first, then attempt to help others. You have to make sure you're in good enough shape before you can help anybody else. So, you know, take care of your own business first, get yourself healthy, get yourself whole, and then give unto others as you can.
And then practice feeling empathy for the biggest tornado around. Because you know how the shaman steers the tornado? He feels the pain of the tornado until the tornado falls in love with the shaman. When he says he's feeling the pain, he's feeling what it is that's bleeding the charge. Because your pain is only where the fractality is bleeding charge, and restoring compression restores that charge. So to feel someone else's pain is actually to feel where their aura is not fractal enough. And when you embed in that, you gain inertia. So don't try to feel the pain of a steel building, because you're going to embed yourself in an unembeddable structure. But feeling the pain of someone who's exquisitely sensitive, and your aura will embed both.
And Dan, that was, again, beautifully stated. I mean, I know exactly what you're saying, and I will follow your advice to the very, very best of my ability, because, you know, you're a smart guy, and beyond just being smart, you're a wise man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your reaching so many people. Our mission is to become shareable wave as education, so I'm pleased to be with you, Mike. Thanks very much.
Well, Dan, the pleasure is mine. I thank you so much. I want to remind everyone again that tomorrow my guest is Mr. Keshe. He's going to be on. You know, he had someone contact me last week and asked for a radio show. So we're going to have Mr. Keshe on tomorrow. I wanted to get you on the day before because you bring order to Keshe. Because, like as I explained earlier in the show, I had a hard time understanding his concepts until you translated them for me.
So, thank you. Well, ask him what phase kind.